Good morning,
my apologies that I'm joining 2 minutes late. COVID will always take control of our lives, so just receive the bereavement, but it's fine. Let me thank members for accepting and the understanding of us rescheduling our meeting for today. It was reasons beyond our control. I don't want to waste any time in welcoming everybody. On a lighter note, I was sent a message on our last meeting. Somebody said, we are still on air and we are talking about chocolates. Now, I responded to him, this person, and say, he's talking about chocolates and parliamentary. And he said, no, Chair, I thought you were not aware. I said, no, I was. So, I don't see Honorable Bagram. I don't know whether he was intimidated about that. And I hope we'll get the apologies. But yeah, in welcoming everybody, you know, Honorable Dana's smile is forever. It makes you feel a bit relaxed at times. It's such a beautiful smile. It's a Friday, Honorable Members. Let's not be that careful. We will now back to the business of the day. We will then request Mr. Sakaza to take us through who is in the meeting, and I would appreciate if guests and the DJ will take us through welcoming the. I see the Deputy Minister is here. I'm not quite sure whether the Minister has joined us. Then after that, we must then know who is here. I see there are a couple of emails that I'm assuming that those people are people from media. Over to Mr. Sakaza.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, Chair, and the members, as well as the Minister, Deputy Minister, and the Department at large. Chair, today we have the following members of the Portfolio Committee on Labour. We've got Honorable Chair, Honorable Ngabane, Honorable Zuma, Honorable Kado, Honorable Nkondo, and Honorable Dana. I have received an email from Honorable Bagram to say that he will be joining a little bit late, and Honorable Yinana is still on bereavement. That's all from the member, Chair, and then from the support staff, I've got myself, Mr. Ngobe.
Honorable Mdabe.
Honorable Mdabe just joined us. I've got myself, Mr. Ngobe, Mr. Mkwena, the fetcher, and another Mr. Mkwena, Sakile from Communications, and Ms. Poshi and Abini. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. DJ, can
Gigi,
who is here from your team, can you take us through?
Good morning, Chairperson and the Honorable Members, Minister, Deputy Minister. From the department side, Chairperson, we have Mr. Vuyo Mafata, who is the Compensation Fund Commissioner. We have Masha Bremkost, who is the UIF Acting Commissioner. We have the support staff from the DG's office, Matabele Mataboke, and Karabo Mkhakhane from the office of the Deputy Minister. I see we have Nosiwaku from the Minister's office as well. Thank you, Chair. Sorry, Chair, we have Tando Abada, the PLO, the department, and Wendy Ledwin with my office. I see we have Randy Mwele as well, who's the head of the PM's office. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, DJ. Are there any guests that have joined us? Can they please introduce themselves? I see Mr. or Ms. Vasson. Are there any guests that are here, Mr. Sakas? Why are they?
They should just mention themselves because they are. Ah, yes. Broadcast.
I really don't understand why when now we are on the virtual meetings, guests are a bit reluctant to introduce themselves because we are not doing something that is untoward. When people are in the, when it was a physical processes of meetings, people will introduce themselves. And I'm humbly requesting that people do that. If they are refusing to introduce themselves, I will have to take a decision that they will have them to be out of the meeting. We're not doing something that we've never done before. So I see there's Mr. Mado. I see that there's somebody from the AG's office. Who is it?
Good morning, Chairperson. I am streaming for Parliament TV. I'm a Parliament audio streaming. So my daughter Fora, I'm going to request as well, Chairperson, that we are live for this meeting, if you can also switch on the video and the guests to switch on the video on this. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mado. Who else? Now they have vanished.
Linda Enzo is there. I see Enzo. And that's Linda from...
Business Day. Yes, I'm Linda Enzo from Business Day newspaper.
Okay. I see there's a hand from Cadelo.
Chair, I'm the parliamentary liaison manager or the stakeholder liaison manager for the agenda.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. I see there's somebody from BDFM. Who is that one?
That's Linda, Chair. Linda, will you be from...
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. No, thank you very much, honorable members. I think just to remind our guests and members, because at the end, when the office of the chair is called on something that is being said by somebody, I must then be able to say, yes, that person was in the, that's what was said in the committee, that person was in the committee. We just want to have that, and it's a respect, it's a practice that has always been there. So I thank you very much, honorable members. Our agenda items are two. One is that we felt that it's important, Honourable Minister, that since last year we got the report that there are staff members, senior members in UIF that have been on suspension, and we just want to check with the department, how far are you? What is the situation? Yes, we got a report from the SIU. They came with their report this week on Tuesday. The second one is on compensation fund. Remember that since we took over from this office, from this portfolio committee, my apologies. Members have always have a concern and wanted that the compensation fund must also reflect on us, because it was then the interest of the committee that we must not only be focusing on how much is paid to service providers and not have an understanding how much then finally goes to a worker that is injured on duty. Institute. It has been coming up all the time, Minister, and we thought that it's important that today we get that. And I hope therefore that our expectations will be met. I thought I saw the minister here. Minister, I will then just hand over to you for any overview if you feel that there is a need for that for now. And then after that we'll then hand over to the DG for the DG to take us through who's going to make a presentation. And thank you very much. Over to you, Honourable Minister. As we have been requested by Ojo, is that we are live, and therefore when we speak, when a person speaks, must please switch on your video camera. Only when a person is speaking. I understand Mato by saying that, but they are interested in seeing us as people that are speaking. Over to you, Minister.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson, the honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, the Deputy Minister, the DG, and the senior management of the department. The commissioners and the management teams of both UIF and the Compensation Fund. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for the opportunity, Chairperson. With regards to UIF suspension of senior manager, I think the DG and the acting UI commissioner they will be able to make an improvement, and the officials remain suspended, but they remain on suspension pending the finalization of the SIU investigation and the lifestyle of it. I know that members might feel it's taking too long because people are seated at home and unfortunately, we have to follow the due process. We have to follow the labor legislation. We are the last to violate those due processes. With regards to consequent management, more generally, I think earlier this week you received a report from the SIU and the SCM investigation, which resulted in the recommended charges against seven of the chapter, including the three managers. And the SIU investigations are ongoing, and I think Joe Masha would speak more on that. To receive a fuller picture of the consequent management and the measures to combat corruption, the committee needs to receive first a report on the UIF's follow the money program, which is now beginning to bear fruits. And this represents the comprehensive audit of COVID-19 cash benefits payments to identify wrongly made or fraudulent payments, as well as where deserving workers did not receive workers due to them because of employers. And sometimes I don't think the committee becomes a heart on this issue of employers. In relation to the report from the compensation plan, you see a clear upward trend in claims, mirroring the first wave of the pandemic. It will be interesting to see if we'll get the same pattern during the second wave of the pandemic once the figures are collated. When it comes to the claims per sector, the commissioner will want to give the further details on the government sector, which both have the table and is said to be exempt.
happens later today as part of a longer-term process to review the progress in addressing underlying structural and systemic problems in line with the report and the recommendation of the state-owned enterprise. Because there is a process going on there which is led by the president looking at this particular thing. In particular, this means looking at the following. We revisit the mandates of the funds. We review the legal framework and the structure against that mandate. We audit of the capacity and the skills against the mandate. We review the appropriateness of the systems and processes. And also review of the operating model and the governance structure. We want to also interrogate risks and compliance measures. And lastly, the measures and controls to combat fraud and corruption. We will also look at the plans and progress in relation to immediate priorities. These are the immediate priorities for the team audit and strengthening the service to the clients and the public. Thanks, Chair. I think the officials led by the DG, they will lead to the presentation.
No, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honorable Minister. DG, you will then take us through, and who is then going to make the presentation on UIF suspensions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'll request Willie to give the presentation. Zolan, are you giving it from your side?
No, DJ. Willie has been given the right to can write, so okay. He's just busy with it.
Okay.
I'm of the understanding that we were circulated the report whilst we are still waiting for beaming processes. I want to propose to members that there it is.
Thank you very much, Chair. The Minister has indicated that the Portfolio Committee has had a presentation by the SIU on progress with regards to the investigation that is underway at the UIS. And they've mentioned quite a number of the things that we will mention in our report. So we give you the progress on the contractual management that's recommended by the SAU and the status of suspension of the senior officials. Next slide. So SAU finalized the supply chain management investigation and recommended that charges be brought against 7 officials, 4 middle managers and 3 senior managers. And charge sheets have been compiled and handed to the implicated officials. And presiding officers and prosecutors have been appointed for all the middle managers and 1 senior manager. Prosecuting officials appointed for all senior managers. Presiding officers for the senior managers are from outside the Department of Labor. The disciplinary hearing will take place from the 19th of February 2021 to the 26th of February 2021. Next slide. On the status of senior officials that are still suspended, as the minister has indicated, that all the senior managers that were suspended, they remain suspended because the investigation has not yet been finalized. And in their letters of suspension, it was indicated that they are being suspended pending the outcome of the investigation by the SIU. So the SIU has not completed that exercise, and they have shared that information with the committee. And therefore, as a department, we are unable to take any further steps, given the fact that the investigations have not been concluded. And it is only when the investigations are concluded that we will then, based on the recommendations of SIU, implement those recommendations as a department. So that's why that's how far we've moved, Chairperson, with regard to how we've implemented the recommendations of the SIU as far as what they have picked up with regards to breaches around supply chain management processes. We've taken steps, we are waiting the final report from them so that we can then take steps with regards to other officials that have been suspended if there's a need for us to do so. Next slide. I think the next slide is just to thank you, Chair. Thanks, Chair.
Well, thank you very much, DG. Can I? I'd like to propose a process that we then receive the compensation fund report, and then when we receive both of them, after we receive both of them, we then ask questions. Would that be fine, all the members? If members
I would ask that separately.
Who's speaking?
Michael Carlo, Chair, I would prefer questions to be taken separately on the presentations.
Are you proposing that we do them separately?
I am indeed.
Is there any second to that?
Yeah, I would like to do that as well. Sorry, Madam Chair, and I came in a little bit late, but I did hear the presentation, so thank you.
Okay. I don't think I am, Chair. Mkhonto, maybe the majority will disadvantage me, but to me the presentation is too short. I wanted to second what you were proposing. Thanks. Okay, let's say for us to be more focused, and let's okay, if there are questions, can we get questions from the presentation by
Michael Bagram?
Honourable Bagram, who else?
Michael Cotto.
Honourable Cotto, who else? Mkhonto.
And dinner, please, Chair.
Honourable Cotto. Honourable Mkhonto. Honourable Dana. And that's order for now. Over to you, members. We have been requested to our videos to those who have been broadcasted. So let me move it.
May I go ahead?
Yes, you may. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you very much for the presentation. I appreciate it. I first of all apologize for coming in a little late. Sorry about that. I did warn Mr. Zalani about it. Thank you for the presentation. We all know that justice delayed is justice denied. I know that the department suspended the top-ranking officials in the UIF, 6 months ago. I'm
kill me if I'm wrong, but I think it was about 6 months ago. I presume we haven't been doing much about investigating why they were suspended. You don't suspend someone unless you are suspicious of them some wrongdoing. You can't do that. You can't suspend people in midair just because you think there might be an issue. You have to have some pointer as to what's going wrong. I also know the department has, for a few months now, been following their Follow the Money campaign. So I presume they, by now, must have seen, probably all that difficult as to where the money's gone into what bank accounts. That would take you an hour, maybe 2 hours. I'm not sure what we've been doing for 6 months about these people at all. The minister will recall that approximately 8 months ago, I made an allegation which upset him, that there seems to be fraud within the department, within the officials and within the employees within the department. He got very upset and started shouting. In fact, the chair also accused me of making allegations which weren't correct. Those allegations now coming to pass and we're seeing them. And we're hoping for some better consequence management to blame the SIU, who are now doing their own investigation, is no good. The SIU will do an investigation, but it's a very, as we know from the SIU discussion that we had a few days ago, it's a very thin investigation. It doesn't spread properly. And I think that fraud and corruption is a lot more extensive than the SIU's investigation. So we are expecting, and the public are expecting, consequence management. We've had thousands of employees who are literally not paid because of theft and because of money is disappearing. So hopefully we can get, first of all, a court order to stop any monies going out of these individuals' accounts. It looks like almost 6,000 employees of the government have been fingered in this. And please, let's have some action. So thank you for my ability to ask the question.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to take advantage of the Minister's presence just to ask when the details of the extended TERS scheme would be finalised and whether workers on reduced time and reduced pay would be eligible for the extended TERS scheme. I'm thinking in particular of many workers in the hospitality sector who have taken 50, 60, 70% pay cuts and are desperate to know whether they will TERS in terms of the extended rating of the scheme. Is the scheme going to operate as long as there is some form of lockdown that prevents people from earning any or all of their income? But to come to the actual presentation, my questions to the Director General are as follows. Firstly, how much has been paid out to the officials who've been suspended to date? I'd also like to know why it's taken over 6 months to charge the officials and have disciplinary inquiries. And perhaps you could tell us when the charge sheet was actually sent to the four middle managers and the three senior managers. So the hearings are set to run from today to next Friday. So presumably the charge sheet must have been drafted and served at least a week ago. And then you probably won't be able to tell us exactly what the charges are, but could you tell us who the presiding officers and prosecutors are in the case, if not the name, but at least where they have been drawn from? And then finally, who exactly is conducting the lifestyle audit, and when can we expect that to be finalized? Thank you, Chair.
Good morning to you, honourable members, the minister, the deputy minister, the DG and his team. Chair, there is a slide that is talking about disciplinary measures or disciplinary session taking place between the 19th and the 26th of February 2021. I just want to find out if are these the same officials that have been suspended and being investigated by SIU, or we talking about different officials. And if it is the same officials, are these processes not parallel? I will not duplicating activities here. Secondly, Chair, I would like to know what will happen to the salaries the suspended officials are getting now if found guilty, because they are sitting at home, they are getting taxpayers' money, doing nothing, and the process is taking very, very long. So can the minister request SIU to expedite this process so that it gets finalized, and the department focus on other things, because there are many things that still need to be dealt with in as far as these suspected cases are concerned. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Mkhonto. Honourable Dana.
Thank you, Jay, and good morning to everyone. Jay, I just have two questions. The first one is a bit broader than the consequence management for the UIF itself. It's with regards to the presentation of the SIU on Tuesday, and they mentioned that there have been 70 criminal cases opened. And I'd just like to inquire from the DG when the UIF presented last year, and I think it was, if I'm correct, in September already, they already indicated that 70 criminal cases have been opened. So I'd just like to know, were there only 70 instances where criminal behavior was reported, and why is there still only just 70 criminal cases? And maybe if we could just get some information on what the stance of those criminal cases are, I'd appreciate that. And then also on Tuesday, I asked the minister with regards to controls being put in place to prevent similar things happening as we have seen now that has come out in the SIU's investigation, and specifically with regards to government officials and staff in the UIF. The minister indicated that, well, for the lack of a better term, he is behind the PFMA and the DG, and the fact that there's a separation between politics and administration, and I understand that, but I'd still like to know from the minister with regards to policy, what controls will be put in place, and maybe I should put this question to the DG then as well, what controls will be put in place to prevent that hard-earned taxpayers' money and money that's supposed to go to these beneficiaries are being stolen. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, honourable members. By the looks, I don't see any hands. I will then allow the DG and the minister, because there are questions to both officers, to respond. Thank you very much. Over to you.
The DG will start.
Yes, Minister. DG.
Thank you, Chair. I think we've explained the reasons why the officials were suspended, and if honourable members would remember that the minister had a media briefing indicating the rationale behind the suspension of these officials, and it was, and honourable Bakrik is correct that you can't suspend people if you don't have anything that you suspect has been done. And the officials were suspended on the basis of the report that was issued by the Auditor General. And the Auditor General, honourable members will remember, also came to the committee and presented their findings. And it was on the basis of those findings that the department felt that it was important that we suspend those officials because of the key roles that they play at the unemployment insurance fund. Now, I just want to correct this assertion that SIU is conducting its own investigation. When we got the report from the EG, the minister contacted the SIU and asked SIU to specifically do the investigation, focusing on those areas that are covered in the report of the EG. So we could have decided that we will appoint a forensic investigation firm to do that investigation. But we opted for FIU given their wide-ranging powers and their investigative ability that they have and the links that they have with the other law enforcement agencies. We opted for them because we wanted to get to the bottom of the issues that were raised by AG. So unfortunately, it has taken this long for them to do the investigation. Fortunately, they have concluded the supply chain related areas, and that is why we're able to act now on the recommendations that they made. Masha will talk about the following, the money issue. What is it that we're picking up there around following the money? Now, whenever there are fraud and corruption allegations, it's important that we get those allegations investigated. It would be wrong of us to assume that just because the allegations that have been made, we make the state the assumption that, we issue a statement that says the colleagues that are suspended are fraudsters and are corrupt, because the report may come saying something different. And I think that in as much as we understand the importance of the urgency of doing an investigation, it is also important that we treat people as though that they are innocent up until proven guilty, and that's the principle that applies to everybody, and they should be accorded that principle as well. So that's why they are still on suspension, because the investigation has not concluded. Now, on the question raised by Honorable Kato on the details of the extended COVID test, we issued a statement after our discussion with the social partners at NEDLEC, where we were indicating when will the rollout of the claims will begin, and which sectors are going to be covered. And we indicated that the tourism, hospitality, the liquor industry, and all other industries that are in the value chain of these industries that I've mentioned, that as a result of the lockdown could not resume their businesses or had to revert to short time. So those sectors are going to be covered by the extension. The president has announced that the CARES benefit will be extended up until the 15th of September. And for now, that's the position of the Department of Employment and Labor. There may be approaches that will come requesting us to extend the benefit beyond the 15th of March. We will look at that, balance that with the sustainability of the fund, and check whether we'll be able to do so. For now, the extension is up until the 15th of March. We already have a benefit in the unemployment insurance fund, which covers short time. So if there are people who are now working short time, and because companies are going through a difficult time, obviously they will put people on short time, and that's the reason why that benefit was conceived, to make sure that we cover those people that work short time. I don't have the figures as to how much has been paid to the officials that are suspended. We can make that information available. Finance guys, they do have that information. We'll send it to Solani, Chairperson. I mean, why have we taken this long? I've responded to that. The reason why it has taken this long. We have, as a department, we need also to comply with labor relations and accord people the rights that they have. The names of the chairpersons and prosecutors and where they are drawn from. I think the acting commissioner would have the names of the chairpersons and the prosecutors. Who's doing the lifestyle audits? The SIU are doing the lifestyle audits, as they indicated in the presentation to the portfolio committee, that what is outstanding now is to focus on the senior official and do a lifestyle audit, and then they will complete the report. The question by Honorable Mkondo, are these the same officials, or are they different to those that have been suspended, the ones that are being subjected to a dismissal process now? It is only one official who was suspended together with the top management of the fund, who's part of the group that is being charged now for supply chain related breaches. And that was done by the head of supply chain, the director of supply chain. But the rest of the officials were not suspended. So that's the response to that question, Chair. We're not duplicating processes. What we're doing now is implementing the recommendation of the SIU. They gave us a report, and on the strength of that report, we're now taking the actions that we're taking. So there's no duplication. So what is going to happen to the salaries of the officials once they're found guilty? We suspended them, and they deserve to get the salaries that they're getting. And once they're found guilty, we'll stop paying them. That's just the normal process. So the acting commissioner will deal with the 70 criminal cases and the questions outside. Honorable Dana, all the controls that are being put in place to prevent money being stolen. Honorable members will remember that from the very onset, the department stated clearly that what we will do, we want to make sure that the money that we pay to the employers to hand over to the employees is indeed reaching the hands of the employees. And hence we spoke in about following the money. That's the first thing. The second thing is, given the fact that the system that we used or that we are using to pay the TERS benefit is a different system from the normal system that we're using on a day-to-day basis to pay the ordinary benefit, the system that requires BI. We will make sure that the two systems talk to one another, interfacing, and we'll close the loopholes with regards to the bank account challenges that we have with regards to bank verifications. We've closed that gap now. So all the challenges, all the issues that we picked up with regards to the controls that were lacking, as per the report of the Auditor General, those controls now have been put in place, and we're pretty sure that nothing of this sort will happen. And of course, we are investigating a number of the the allegations that have been leveled against some of our officials in the value chain of the processing of the claims, because there have been suggestions that the people who defrauded the fund were able to get through to the system were aided by the officials of the fund, because that is also the subject of the investigation, and once we finalize that, we'll then act accordingly. But what we've done also, we brought in the National Treasury Agency called GTEC to have a thorough go on our systems, the ICT systems that we're using, and whether the system has the capacity to handle the amount of web transactions that go through the system. And just have indicated to us that the system is pretty much well defined. You just need to look at your business processes, and that's what we've been doing. And we still have support from GTEC, especially from the World Bank, that GTEC attended to the unemployment insurance fund to see to it that a number of the areas that were highlighted by the AG indeed being addressed. But most importantly for us is that we integrating the IT system that we've been using into the daily operations of the fund, and so that it does not only become a system for once-off process or benefits such as COVID tests, but it becomes a system that we use on a daily basis, given the fact that it can handle huge volumes of transactions, and that you can pay benefits within 24 or 48 hours if that application is a competent application. So then I'll ask Marsha to respond to a number of questions that were asked that I did not respond to.
Thank you, Jay.
you very much, DG, acting as commissioner of your IF.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to everyone. I would like to talk about the issue of the Follow the Money. The Follow the Money project was conceptualized to make sure that indeed each worker received the money that they were entitled to. I think members will recall and would have had experience themselves of workers complaining that they can see on the system that the money was paid to the employer, but that they have not received the money, and therefore they lodged a complaint with us. So we have appointed these auditing firms to do the audits for us, and they have started full-blown, full-scale auditing in the second week of January. And up to now, they have audited and verified the payment of 440,000 workers that were paid in terms of the CARES scheme. And they have verified payments to the value of 774 million rand. Now, interesting of that, of the 774 million rand, 604 was found to have been correctly paid to the workers. 170 million, though, was not correctly paid, and it's either the result of some form of fraudulent claim, or employers who did not transfer all the money, or employers who did not transfer the money at all to workers. And we are busy with those processes in terms of dealing with the Follow the Money. We have continued with, we will continue with this project in any case until the finalization. It's a 6-month project, and we are driving this process to make sure that workers get the money that they are entitled to. If I can talk, I think the next question that I have to talk about is the presiding officers, where we've drawn them from. We've drawn them from the Government Employees Pension Fund, and I just want to back up a moment. These are all specialists in employee relations and supply chain matters. We've drawn them from the Government Employees Pension Fund. We've drawn them from the Department of Culture, Sports and Recreation in Northwest. From the Office of the Premier in Northwest, we've drawn one from internally from the Department for Malanga, as well as someone from the Department of Transport and Communications in the Limpopo province. So you can see that there are indeed people from outside and from other government departments. In terms of the criminal cases, indeed, there were 70. We are standing at 80 now that has been handed over to the South African Police Service, where they have to do the further investigation in terms of the criminal cases. 14 employers have already appeared in court and are out on bail. And we are, as we finalise these cases, we see that there is indeed evidence of corruption or fraud. We give the hand of the cases, of course, to the South African Police Service. I think that takes care, Chairperson. Thank you for the questions I had to this morning too.
Thank you very much. There was a question to the minister. Minister?
Yeah, thank you. Sorry. From my question now. The question on the about justice delayed and justice denied, that we can suspend until we do have some indications that we did exactly that. We're guided by the agents of God. If systems have collapsed, there are no controls, the management must answer. And especially if it goes to such a large scale. But what we are not going to do here, Chair, we don't want to discuss the merits and the demerits of the suspension. I think we'll be discussing that in a wrong platform. We must allow for these processes to follow their own course. If people were suspended unfairly and they go through the DC, the outcome of the DC would be able to tell us. and especially when you deal with senior managers, we would also be having people coming from outside. But the fact that it was said there were no controls in relation to 123, the top management must account. And I'm saying, and I continue to say, Honorable Dana, there's no gap in policy. If there's a gap in policy, the minister has to come in and address those policies and put and update the policy. There's no gap here. The issues which we are dealing with are operational issues. Hence, therefore, those who are managing the operational issues are the ones who are dealing with those issues of controls. It's just as simple as that. Will there be the scheme operate as long as the lockdown? No. It's going to depend on the affordability and sustainability of the scheme. That will be reviewed. We are always guided by our actuaries. Even this decision, which has been taken, announced by the president, we have to do a lot of calculations. And we have to look into areas which have never been able to open since. Like we have said it open, hospitality, the restaurant, the liquor and the whole venue chain. But the criteria is very strict because the funds are shrinking. What we do not want to do is to collapse that fund like it happened in 2008. And also what we are seeing now, there's more pressure on the normal retrenchments. So the fund has to respond to that. And we are trying to look and say, we can't be able to disappoint those people because they have a claim. That was their insurance. They put the money. So the biggest now which is confronting us, once we are dealing with the outstanding issues, the outstanding claims of tests. But the biggest focus now has become the normal retrenchments. And all others are catered for in terms of the normal retrenchments. And I think the DG has also articulated that. What else? No, we must do the calculation properly. We've not taken more than 6 months. People were suspended in September. We are going to finish the 6 months now. September, October, November, December. It's now February. So it has not taken more than 6 months. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. I think on that, we'll then allow the compensation fund.
Chair, would you permit any follow-up questions?
Mr. Cardo, Honorable Cardo. Follow-up questions on the UIF. One follow-up question per member. Otherwise, we will have a serious problem.
Okay, Chair. The acting UIS commissioner quoted, I think, a figure of 170 million rand as incorrect payments, some of which may have involved intentional fraud. I wanted to know, what is the total amount in rand terms of fraud associated with TERS insofar as UIF officials themselves are concerned? Are you able to disaggregate that? And I'm also struggling to understand the exact nature of the fraud committed. We know, for example, that some civil servants claimed illegally, they double-dipped, that some non-existent ID numbers got paid, etc. But is there any evidence of collusion between UIF officials and private sector employers in
asking questions on these matters, and as we come to meetings, having looked into the agenda, my understanding is that there have been processes that have been there before. For an example, what necessitates all these suspensions and investigations is because the AG presented a report to us, particularly around cares in UIF and the depth of the corruption. If I can quote the late AG, may he so rest in peace, he said, "We went where the eagles dare." And I hope when we are asking questions, some of the things, well, so that we are not asking relevant questions, but at times it comes across to me as if we ask questions as if we have never been informed. And our understanding of the investigation, because the more you investigate, the more you find something. But if the acting commissioner and the DG are able to quantify what these questions that have been asked, the follow-up by Mr. Cardo, can they do that if they're able? And over to you, either DG or acting commissioner in particular.
Thank you, Chairperson. The Follow the Money process focuses on whether employers have paid the money correctly over to the employees. As you know, the TERS system was developed so that employers could claim and we would pay them the money, well, in the beginning at least the money to the employer, thereafter there was an option whether it was to the employer or to the employee directly. So this Follow the Money process is around whether employers, it focuses on whether employers correctly pay the money to the employees. So at this stage, I've not seen any evidence of collusion between UIF officials and employers in terms of not paying money over to employees. It's early days. We'll wait and see what happens in terms of these audits, and then clearly if there is any signs or any proof of wrongdoing, we will take corrective action with consequential management. But at this stage, I've not seen anything in terms of the Follow the Money project. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Acting Commissioner. DJ, is there anything that you want to respond on this follow-up so that we can then go to the compensation fund?
No, thanks, sir.
Thank you. We will then, DJ, go now receive the presentation from the compensation fund. I don't know, you will indicate whether you are going to start or it will then be Ms. Commissioner Mafata will then do that.
Commissioner Mafata will do that, Chair.
Thank you. Over to you, Commissioner Mafata.
Thank you, Chair. And good morning to the Chairperson and honorable members. Chair, I will bring the presentation also from my side, will you? From slide 1 to slide 8 is the background information that I will skip, Chair, relating to the compensation funds, the mandate, and so on. I will just go straight to the claims payments information as was requested by the committee. Now, the information that we have is payments that we've made at the compensation fund in current financial year, April 2022, December 2020, at the end of quarter 3. But preceding that is just a high-level overview of the payment history over the last 5 years of the compensation fund. We have moved from a 4.1 billion in 2015-16, and at the end of the 2019-2020 financial year, we're sitting at 3.2 billion. Now, the 3.2 billion rents of claims that we've paid, if we look at the current financial year, 1.8 billion was paid to medical service providers and third parties. I will also provide a detailed breakdown of who, which, what money went to who. And when we look at the money that went to the workers, this would be the monies that are indicated in the compensation benefits column as well as the pensions column. Now, the compensation benefits, these are benefits that we pay for permanent disability as well as temporary disability payouts that we pay for workers. And then the pensions would be then for those who suffer permanent disabilities, and as a result of those disabilities, they then qualify for pensions, or in the event where the occupational injury or disease has resulted in death, then the fatal pensions are then paid out to the dependents of those workers. So the bottom of the slide just shows then the trend graphically of the payments that we've made. We've seen that we've been stable around the payments that we've been making across all three benefit types. When we look at the current year's benefits, Chair, this just shows also the steady trend around how we started from the beginning of the financial year in April to end of December. We see that to date we've paid about 2.2 billion rands in medical aid costs. These are paid to medical service providers as well as to the third parties that would represent some of these medical service providers, where such invoices would have been seen that to the third parties. We've also then paid directly to workers 104 million rands in compensation benefits, as you could have indicated. These are partial as well as temporary, as well as permanent disability payouts that we pay out after we finalize the claim, and where the claim results also in a monthly pension. And this would be paid, about 909 million was paid in the current financial year to the pensioners. Chair, and then this just shows the information that was on the graph previously, then just breaks it down per month, and it just shows how much went into pensions, how much went into med compensation benefits, and how much was paid in medical aid costs over the course of the financial year. You see that on the medical aid costs, on average, we've been steady at around 200 million rands a month that we've been paying towards the medical costs, and we've been steady around. We've seen a huge increase in the payments to clients in terms of compensation benefits. They have started slow, and as the users became comfortable with the system, we started picking up the trend. And also when we moved beyond the lockdown, where we then had more people working in the office as well as remotely, the payments also then increased. It's the same also on the pension side. We then also tried to show where we are at the end of December versus where we were at the end of the financial year last year. We see that for medical aid costs, we basically surpassed the payment that we've made for the full financial year last year, only in the first three quarters, 20% up. And when we look at the compensation benefits, we're about 42% below where we were in the full financial year last year. And I think one of the big contributors would then be the fact that a large number of the claims that we've seen have been for those exempted employers where we do not pay compensation benefits and we do not also pay pensions. We adjudicate the claim and pay the medical costs, and then the state takes care of the other benefits through the government pensions administration agency. And also the fact that we haven't had much activity also in the labor market, and as such, because of the lockdown, so we don't see many claims being registered. We'll see when I talk to the actual numbers of claims that have been registered in the current year that there has been a steady decline in the number of claims registered. Chair, and this is a slide that is not in the pack that was distributed. We added the slide late last night. We thought it would also be even useful to just show a breakdown of the payments that we've made as to where the money went to. When we look at, so in the claims process of the compensation fund, the medical service providers, so we pay the medical service providers for the medical costs, but also for the medical care that they've provided to the injured worker. And then we also then pay the injured worker themselves via disability payouts. And also we then also, those that are disabled above a specific threshold, we then qualify also for disability pensions. Now the disability pensions and the temporary and permanent disability payments, these are the payments that go directly to the worker. So if we look at the total amount of money that was paid in the current financial year, about about 28% has been paid in the form of pensions, 3% was paid in temporary and permanent stability payouts to the workers, and then we have about 68% that have gone to medical service providers. We've also then split this between those that are paid directly to the medical service provider, where the service provider only utilizes third-party agents for the purposes of submitting claims on their behalf as an administrating agent. This is about 1.2 billion. And we also have instances where the medical service providers would cede their right to the claim by sending their claim to a third party at a cost, and they then forfeit a certain portion of their fees as a result, and then these monies are paid out to these third-party agents. So the money that was paid in the last financial year alone was 1 billion rands, which makes up about 31% of the total payment that we've made in the current financial year. And once again, I think just important note at the bottom that we do not, at this point, we do not allow any exceeding of claims, workers' claims, in terms of Section 33 of the COIDA Act. The ceding of the right to claim is prohibited. So as a result, for pensions, for the temporary and permanent disability payments paid directly to the worker. And this just shows also the 3.2 billion that we paid exclude those invoices that would have been accepted in the system, but when our claims handlers go through the claims, they would then reject some of these claims either for being invalid or they may not be supported by accurate and complete information to substantiate why we should pay such medical claims. So what we had rejected up until the end of December was about 52,000 invoices, amounting to about 348 million rands. And these invoices come in different forms, those that have been captured in the app that we make available to medical service providers to do so in their own offices is about 3,000 invoices. Those that have been submitted through the switch process, which is an electronic patient process that we allow for medical providers, especially those with huge volumes of invoices, to be able to electronically submit these invoices to the compensation. Then we have about 655, which are the invoices that would have been captured, that would have been submitted in paper to the compensation fund and were captured by our claims handlers. In the next slide, I just then show the claim numbers. In the previous slide, I was showing the rent value of the claims that we paid. This slide then just shows the actual number of claims, occupational injury and occupational disease claims that have been submitted to the compensation fund. But this is also a trend over the last 5 years. Over the last 5 years, we've seen that we've steadily been in the 100,000s when it comes to the number of claims, but we have seen a decline over the last financial year in the number of claims, and I will also in the next slide talk to where we are in the current financial year. So in the current financial year, we have received, up until end of December, we have received 72,000 claims, and this is a, when we compare to the last financial year for the full year, it's about 20% below that, but we still have about 3 months of the financial year to go, so there are some claims that we still receive capturing. And then this just breaks it down. Per province, we'll see that the Western Cape leads the pack, the number of claims that have been received, followed by Gauteng, 17,000, Western Cape is about 22,000, then KwaZulu-Natal also 18,000 claims, and then the rest of the claims 14,000 through the different provinces. We have also created claims processing and capturing capacity at head office. We then also show where we assist the provinces to deal with some of the claims, where we need to sweep and assist with expediting some of the claims. So this is just that, and then the graph at the bottom just shows the graphical presentation of the same numbers that are on the table above. When we look at the claims per industry, we've tried to look at the top 25 industries that contribute to the most claims. We've seen about 25 industries contribute about 76% of the claims of the compensation fund. And on this slide also last night, we've just added the actual numbers next to the percentage on the slide that you have. You see the percentage, we've just put the number next to the percentages that are there. We see that government
taxpayer or the exempted employers are the ones that are leading with about 11% of the claims coming through government, followed by food and retail, food retail and the hospitals, as well as the forestry, tillage and security services, as well as the meat product industry. Those are the main top four or five industries, and then the rest also of the industries are also included, indicated in the table above, and these make up about 76% of the claims. Then we have, if you look at the rule number 35, it just shows all the other sectors that you've aggregated together, which make up 23% of the claims, of the rest of the claims that we have received in the current financial year. Lastly, we then also sort of then reflect also on, out of the 72,000 claims that we've indicated that we've received, which of those are making up a part of the COVID-19 claims. You recall that in July this year, the minister issued a directive where we were declaring a COVID-19 acquired in the workplace as an occupational disease that is covered in terms of COIDA. So we then also then monitor the statistics related to these claims that we receive. If we look at this just shows where we were in April when we first started considering claims for COVID-19 up to end of December, where we are. We've seen that, I think, when we look at the peak months have been around May, June, July, August, when we had a large number of claims being submitted, and also when most of the employers started going back into the office around May, then we started receiving a lot of the claims that we processed. We've increased from 69% in May to 6% in June, 63% in July, and 52% in August. And we had seen stabilization and a decline in the number of claims that were being submitted during those months, as we know that the department also published occupational health and safety directives that were then providing directive on the safety measures that the employers need to put in place when workers come back to the workplace. So some of the safety measures then had went and resulted in a decline in the number of claims that we were receiving. Then this just breaks it down the province here just to show, consistent with the trend that we've seen in the total claims, we've seen that Western Cape, KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng remains the big provinces with the numbers of claims that have been registered. And in the case of COVID-19, we also see Eastern Cape also being high up there with the top three provinces that have received a large number of claims. And this just shows that presentation per province. Okay, we then also just showed the graphs just to show. We can see that also we had reached the peak around December when we thought that the graph would then be starting to go down. But based on the second wave that we've seen, we anticipate that this graph will not necessarily go down, but it may go up to be consistent with the cases that have been reported currently with regard to COVID-19. So this just shows out of the total 13,297 claims that we've received, how the growth has been. We break it down also per province. It just shows the growth for Gauteng, Western Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, and Eastern Cape. We see 4,194 claims for Gauteng, 4,388 for Western Cape, 1,670 for Eastern Cape, 1,695 for KwaZulu-Natal, but the growth has been the same, that is of growth. And then we also then show for the other provinces that had the least number of claims, Mpumalanga 1,083, but the graph also has shown that upwards trend to the month of December. Northern Cape 199, Free State 157, Northwest 127 cases. The other provinces also is Limpopo. We see Limpopo a different trend where the number has been a bit consistent. It's standard. We have about 24 cases that have been reported in Limpopo. And then also we have some of the claims that are captured and dealt with that may not necessarily be allocated to a specific province, either because of the way the employer is registered and also because they have been dealt with at the head office and not necessarily at the provincial office. Then this just showed the payments that we've made towards COVID-19 claims. This just shows we have a total of about 11 million rands
11.8 million that we've received in invoices, medical invoices, for COVID-19, which is the bulk of what we have paid, because the large number of claims that we've seen for COVID-19 have been from the exempted employer sector, which is government. As I indicated previously, we only pay for medical costs, and the rest of the costs are covered by the Government Pensions Administration Agency. The out of this 11 million, 10 million has been paid to the medical providers, and there are other invoices that are in the different statuses. We know that we have rejected about 313 invoices amounting to 341,000 rands, and others in the various stages. Check. There are some compensation benefits that we've paid, but the amount is quite negligible compared to the amounts that we've paid in medical invoices. Check. That's the end of my presentation, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Mafate. Honourable members, there is the presentation. Any takers? Honourable Kado. Mukwanto. Honourable Kado, Honourable Mukwanto.
Dinner, please check.
Honourable Dinner. I see your Honourable Mugabe's hands. Okay, in that order, Honourable Mukwanto. I'm sorry, Honourable Kado.
Thank you, Chair. I've got two questions. Firstly, what percentage of claims come to the fund via third parties, and how is Section 43 of the COID Amendment, or apparently before Parliament, going to affect that? And then secondly, what's the total amount of unpaid claims claimed by medical service providers and disputed by the fund? How many illegal actions and active cases are there currently against the fund? Thank you.
Honourable Mukwanto.
Thank you, Chair. There is a slide, Chair, that talks about what is paid, the amount paid to the medical aid, and then third party, and then the employee. I see the figures there. There is somewhere the third parties are getting more than the workers. I don't know whether I got that correctly. But then my question is there any maximum, prescribed maximum percentage of money or funds that has to be paid to the third parties? I understand with the medical aid, it depends on the seriousness of the injury, that cannot be controllable. But to the third parties, is there any prescribed percentage of the funds that has to be paid to them? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Mukwanto. Honourable Dana.
Okay, thank you. Please excuse me, I know I'm just surprised to switch on my camera, but my bandwidth is very low, so I'll be keeping it off. I just want to ask one question, and it's with regards to delayed payments to workers directly. Mr. Mafate would remember that I contacted him during the week, and I'm very grateful for his help with the matter, but I was wondering, this specific person, and I'm sure there are many people out there because I've been contacted by others as well, their claim had been pending for quite some time, and I'm talking about between 4 and 2 years, where the fund has accepted liability for the claim, but no money has been paid out. And I'd just like to know how many claims are there where the fund has accepted liability, but where payment is still delayed.
Thank you, Honourable
Dana. Honourable Mugabe. Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, and good morning to Honourable Members, the Honourable Minister and Deputy Minister, DG and Commissioners, and all the staff present. thanks for the presentations and the, we welcome them. I have one question. Is there a law or rule that prohibits the mentioning of a name of an injury worker to the portfolio committee? I'm raising this chair because my expectation on the report seems not to have been addressed. Sibusiso Mdabe is employed by ShopRite. He falls from the scaffold or the ladder. He breaks his femur and the arm. He goes to the doctor. And therefore, then the doctor refers him to a medical institution. Therefore, then the doctor asks the middleman to lodge a claim with the compensation fund. Now, what I want, I was expecting from the report, is that you then say, here is a sector that has high incidence of injured on duty. You don't want all of them that have been injured. You just want a sample of maybe 3 to 5 per sector that has a high rate. You say Musiso Mdabe broke his femur working in that shop right. This is what was paid to the medical institution. This is what was paid to the doctor. This is what was paid to the middleman, and this one then there's was sometimes received at the end of the day. So the global figures that have been presented to us do not assist us to take an informed decision in terms of how, therefore, we need to deal with our oversight work. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mugabe. Mr. Mafaka, respond to the questions. Are they here? Are they still around?
Yes, sir. And the commissioner will respond, sir.
Okay. Mr. Mafaka.
Thank you, sir. The percentage of claims that come through third parties, so what we do not have in the slides would be total amount of, especially the notification for occupational injuries, because we know that some employers don't do this work directly, and they outsource it to pay consulting firms that would assist them to register claims, so that's information we don't have. What we showed on the slides is basically because with medical providers, we do know that medical providers do appoint practice managing firms, administrators and agents to do invoices on their behalf. So all the invoices that are submitted to the compensation fund, which will make up the 2 billion that I showed on the previous slide, all those come from third parties or agents. But there are differences. So you have those invoices that come from third parties because a doctor or a hospital chooses to utilize work for them to submit, but the person that we deal with that we still continue to interact is the health provider, hospital or the doctor. Then you have other incidents, and these make up about 37% of the total claims that we paid. It's about 1.2 billion. On the slide, I've also shown that the other portion is about 31% of the total claims that we paid in the current financial year. These are the monies that are then paid to third parties. And these are invoices where a doctor would have given up their right to this claim through some commercial arrangements that they would have with a third party, and then the third party and also would forfeit some of the fees as part of those commercial arrangements. And then when we do pay the money, we then pay it over to these third parties. So that's that 1,042,000,000 that is also shown on that slide when we break down.
issues of the so the money that we pay to medical in terms of medical aid fees, this is as per the gazetted tariffs that we publish, that the minister publishes annually at the beginning of the financial year, where we indicate for these specific procedures, this is how much money we pay, and for certain consultations, this is how much money we pay. So when a worker has been treated as a result of the injuries, the treating doctor or the health institution would then submit their invoice based on those tariffs that is published to the Gazette. So obviously the money would be slightly more because the cost of healthcare is quite high compared to the benefits. When we do pay the benefits now to the injured worker, that is based on the level of disability that the worker has suffered, as well as the earnings of the worker at the time that the incident would have happened. But there are maximums and minimums that are published also by the incident. How much money, what is the minimum amount that is payable to an individual worker? So how many matters are delayed for workers, and what is the number of where the fund has accepted liability and nothing has been done? So now, maybe if I can just take the committee back, because if you recall, one of the things why when we made changes in our processes as a result of the, when we implemented the new system, when we said, part of the trend that we have seen over the few years has been that there has been emphasis and focus on the medical service providers being paid at the disadvantage of the injured worker. And it was largely because of the practice that we had allowed, where, for example, we would allow 80% to register and claim on behalf of the workers. So workers will go to a medical provider to be treated, and once they're treated, the medical provider would then submit the claim for the worker. But we have seen that most of these claims, if not all of them, would only have sufficient information to ensure that the medical provider is paid, and would then be left chasing, having to look for the worker and even to try and find the information that we need to be able to finalize claim. That is the reason why we then changed our processes to say, if a claim is going to be registered, a claim must be registered by someone who has the full authority to register such a claim, and he has all the information to be able to do so, so that we don't have instances where medical providers are paid, but the workers remain unpaid even for months, if not years, when we don't have all the information that we need to be able to finalize this particular claim. So, as at today, there's about 84, we have processed over the last few years close to about 1.2 million claims. Out of those 1.2 million claims, about 84,000 of the claims still remain under investigation because they have been registered that we have accepted liability for the claim, but we don't have the rest of the information to be able to then complete this information, because at the time we never would have captured the claim, only had the interest in one part of the claim, which may be payment of the medical invoice, not necessarily on the finalization of the total claim for the worker. So when we do get instances where the worker then inquire, for example, we then able to communicate to the worker and say, this is the information that we are sending, and in most cases we then get it and we are able to finalize the claim. We have published in the past 3 years annually notices where we actually invite any person who has a claim in the compensation fund and their claim has not been attended to. They must come forward and so that we can tell them what is the information we need so that we can then finalize it. Most of these campaigns have not been as successful as we want because we get fewer people coming forward. We have then resorted also to working with the social partners to try and have some kind of sessions with social partners where we reach out to both the employers as well as the workers to try and make sure that we get some of this information. We're hoping that this approach would then work much better than the notice that we have published, because we've seen that we don't seem to be getting a lot of this information when we do get it. Chair, the question around, is there any law that prohibits the mention of the issue of record? I'm not aware of such, but that's something that we will check with our services, but there shouldn't be any. The only thing I know is that in terms of the National Health Act, there's certain information that we may not be able to divulge relating to themselves, especially as far as it relates to their health care, as well as the treatment of their health, make sure that we, for each of these industries, we then able to then just provide some samples of what are the claims for industry, what is the cost related to this particular claim, both for medical costs, money that went to the worker, as well as the money that would have been paid in pensions out of these these claims. We do know that the OPI is also coming into effect on the 1st of July. We are also assessing the impact of it in as far as the information that we work with is concerned, particularly what information we can make public and what other information also we can be able to allow third parties and so on to interact with on behalf of either employers, workers, or medical providers as a result of some of the provisions in OPI. So we are doing that assessment. But the information that is requested by us now, we will go to check to make sure that we work on these reports and provide them to the secretary. Thank you, Chair.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Mafate. I think honourable members, those are the responses that we are getting from the compensation fund, and I think we will then continue in the acting if there is a need to do that, which in fact there will always be a need to do that. I'm just reminded on something that I should have mentioned earlier, is that there are three persons that perished at Assemblytown factory, three workers, and they may their soul rest in peace. And I think we have to in communication with the office of the House Chair for Committees, check if we can have an urgent oversight visit to that. Because as the committee that is also dealing with ensuring that the safety of workers at workplaces is maintained, I think it will be important of us to visit that threat. And secondly, honourable members, is that it's our responsibility that we always ensure that what is in the Labour Relations Act, in Basic Conditions of Employment Act, is being adhered to, with the understanding that some of the processes and some of the practice that are happening at workplaces in our entities, the corruption and the fraud around the issues of tariffs, they really make us to be a bit edgy. But unfortunately, we have to apply the law so that everything is being done by the book. Because if we want things to be done rush, we will still be accused by the people that have been suspended, that we have judged them, prejudged them. So let's allow the processes to take its course. Where law enforcement are dragging their feet, we have got all the rights of raising that, and we will follow the processes. Having said that, honourable members, I hope members are aware that today, by 4:30, is the last day submissions in terms of the advert on corridor and employment equity bill. I've then requested Mr. Sakaza to just expose to us how many submissions are there in terms of corridor and how many submissions are there in terms of employment equity amendment bill, so that we are then able to take an informed decision on how to move forward. I will then allow Mr. Sakaza to do that,
and hear from members what is that we are to do. Over to you, Mr. Sakaza.
Thank you, Chairperson. Up until this morning, when I counted all the submissions that we have been receiving ever since the bills were advertised, we have for COIDA currently 57 submissions, and they keep coming in. As you have mentioned, Chair, today the last day at 16:30, according to the advert. And then for the Employment Equity Amendment Bill, we have very little. So far, we have 5 submissions. That's all I can say for now, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sakaza. The exercise is to enable the members of the committee to say, because we are allowed to make an extension in terms of the day for submissions, but that extension must not exceed 2 weeks. So I'm putting it to you, honourable members, to hear which area do you think that we must allow for an extension date for a submission on these 2 bills that have been, their submissions have been tabled to us. Over to you, honourable members, any comments on that? I see the hand of Honorable Ngabane. Any other hand?
Honorable
Kado, Honorable Zuma.
No, greetings, Chairperson and Honorable Members. No, Chair, because we're having this constraint of this pandemic of COVID-19. I assume that maybe the response has been caused by those constraints, because some of the people, they don't have access to technology. So I will then propose that we perhaps extend in particular for the employment equity, hence the response is very low. And then we proceed with all the processes with COIDA. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Honorable Kado.
Chair, I would be in favor of an extension of the period of comment by another 2 weeks for both of those.
Honorable Zuma.
Greetings, Chair and Honorable Members. Thanks, Chair. I'm covered by Honorable Ngabane. I will also propose that it supports the extension of the employment equity. Thank you.
Any other? Honorable Dana.
Thank you, Jay. Jay, I would like to support Honorable Korda, especially with regards to the fact that it is quite difficult and for people to make submissions over the festive season, and also the point that Honorable Gavani made about the constraints that COVID has put on people. So I would like to support this suggestion that we extend the period for comment for both bills.
No, thank you very much, Honourable Members. There are 2 motions. I don't think there really would be a need for us to vote for that. Why don't we agree that as the committee, we will then apply for an extension, and that extension will be So from the, as we will adjourn now, after we adjourn, the secretariat is aware of what to do, but we are then extending the submissions for views for 2 weeks. I think that that will be my I will put that in front of the committee so that we are then able to finalize this. The other thing that I will also do, honourable members, we will apply for an agent oversight. We are allowed to do that. We will then be told how many people will then be allowed to go there. It's worse when there are workers that have perished in the workplace. It is our responsibility to really have an understanding of what transpired in that space. So I'm putting it to the committee so that to check if members are okay with that.